Howdy, folks, and welcome to Dashboard Chats,
where we are recording mini episodes from our dashboard on the drive between our main interviews to discuss the tales and urban legends that aren't quite fit for the mic.
That's right. And ain't every topic ripe for interviewing, but that don't make them any less interesting. Well, at least objectively, because, like, when we talk about it and we don't have a supernatural, fantastic person to interview.
No.
That probably is a lot less interesting for you guys, but, like, objectively, the topics aren't less interesting.
Oh, no.
Man, I'm sorry for the self-deprecating rant.
That's okay.
With that, I'm Harrison, the Florida man.
And I'm Aaron, the cheesehead. Today we come to you from I-10 westbound through the Florida Panhandle, where the air is thick with the clean, salty scent of the sea, and the ground is thick with people of Walmart.
What, you got something against mullets and rat tails? I had one as a kid.
I mean, haircuts scare me a whole lot less than the Confederate banner-waving people in their ECVs.
Hate to break it to you, man, but them folks certainly ain't exclusive to no Florida Panhandle, I can tell you that.
Right. Hey, did you just turn on the radio?
What? No, that weren't me.
Huh. Oh, God, and why is it on AM? Who even listens to that?
I don't know, Granny?
Or my dad.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, that jazz ain't bad. Ain't no Cowboy Bebop. It ain't bad.
Sure.
Welcome back. You're listening to the SQX Monster Radio with me. Elaine Keane, Ghost in the Machine.
What? Ghost in the Machine?
I know Ghost in the Shell, but...
Johnny Static.
What? Hold on. Yeah, it sounds like a real niche radio show.
Yeah, it must be local. I mean, it must be really local.
Wish me is my co-host, the fancy-dressed vampire-ess, Emma Fatale.
I didn't even catch the girl's name, huh?
Pleasure as always, Johnny. Pleasure as always. Unfortunately, our regular featured programming, Hitting the Dusky Trail with Roz Ferratu, has been cancelled after the poor dear forgot to set her clock for daylight savings.
Another one bites the dust. SQX sends a kickoff. Now, get ready for another bee in your bonnet, or to fill this recently allotted vacancy of time. We've picked up a new podcast from the outworld.
That's right, Johnny, and not just any podcast, a human podcast.
Hold your bows for the after party.
Much better.
Hey, she spoke to him real good. Not a dame. Tonight's show is somewhat unique. It's called The Tale. We follow a couple of unsuspecting boys on a road trip across the United States. Boys in search for the unknown.
And how edibly handsome. Just look at them.
What if I could, old girl? But I live in the radio wave. No sight, no smell, no touch.
And without further ado, SQX Monster Radio presents The Tailgate.
Roll it.
Wait, did they just say The Tailgate?
Dude, no way. That would be impossible.
I don't know.
If they did, they probably meant like an actual sports tailgate.
True. I mean... there are tons of actual tailgates down here, especially in the South, college football, whatnot.
Yeah, between Florida and Alabama, it's dime a dozen.
Go Gators. But it is kind of odd, though.
Yeah, odd indeed. Station. Yeah, there is something exciting yet terrifying about the Florida Panhandle, I must say. It's like a drive-through zoo where you're mesmerized by all the crazy stuff you see, but... you start slowing down or rolling down that window, and you risk getting a whole lot more than you bargained for.
Yeah, man, all jokes aside, many residents here, though, are pretty fine folk, and many of their towns and beaches, they hold some of the world's greatest mysteries and secrets.
Well, so I've heard. So, how's about we open up Pandora's box already and get this show started, shall we?
Sure.
Now, one thing I have experienced in the Panhandle was Panama City Beach. What do you? Years back. You remember that?
Yeah, how could I forget, man? We had a weekend of wolves and whiskey, baby.
Oh, boy, was a weekend.
Whiskeys. I guess I didn't drink whiskey. Whiskeys.
Well, the bar that we went to was called either whiskey or whiskeys.
I think it was whiskey. The bar we almost got in a fight.
I don't remember. Yeah, they certainly did not appreciate the Michelle Branch that we put on the jukebox in there.
No, the fact that we called him out for being racist. But what you gonna do when you're like in you're pushing 50, still try to have a ponytail despite having a super receding hairline and hair about as thin as the plot of Twilight.
Oh yeah, that dude looked like the future version of the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
yeah, he was tall. He had like the t-shirt tucked into skinny jeans and a cowboy hat. I feel like yeah. I feel like if the comic book guy from Simpsons and Toby Keith fucked and had a kid.
But
there's a whole table of them, man, huddling around. Visual. Mad
I mean, that
me,
whole bar, I think it was just only us. We were the city kids in the country bar.
I remember the problem was there was a girl at their table, a young girl, knew the black fella who came in and gave him a hug, and they just didn't like it. I remember Toby Keith pushed him and was like, hey, this is my bar. So I got all like on my BlackBerry to tell you how long ago this was. I remember being on my BlackBerry while you were in the bathroom, and I was like, where the fuck your bar, motherfucker? I know you don't own this shit. But of course, I in my brain, that's how I was saying it. But I was like really drunk, so
yes, we were.
I know it was louder than that. And then you come out the bathroom, see them all huddled behind me, like at their table, like they're about to do something.
It was, yeah, because when I went into the bar, like the band was playing and people were talking and it was super loud. And I came back out and I swear to God, it was dead silent. And I was also inebriated. And so I was like, I came back out and it was, thought I had stepped into the Twilight Zone or something
I also don't think it helped that we come in there pretentious as fuck. I remember we brought our pipes.
Yes.
And I was wearing my Harry Potter sweater, but like the knit sweater with the big H that he gets for Christmas. That's like,
right.
It was made out of like Scottish wool.
It looks like it could be like a college,
like Harvard or something. Yeah.
College
like,
sweater.
And of all people, oh, me look like, I look like the pretentious one. Like,
oh,
look
man.
At my hoity-toity self, you know, Florida man.
Smoking pipes.
Yeah, I guess I weren't Florida man enough for them.
No,
I guess
not
the
for
problem.
Them.
No.
Well, I mean, here's the kicker, though. Like, yeah. In Florida, the further north you go in Florida, the more Florida man you get.
Yeah. It's like, seriously, for those who ain't been to Florida, South Florida, I mean, I think Miami even is, like, predominantly... like Cuban, Latino, mm-hmm. it's I think even majority, minority, if that makes sense, majority minority. But I do think it's one of the few cities that is, and it is very Hispanic down there. They're obviously the Everglades down there. You're gonna have some swamp people too, but like Central Florida, mostly tourists. Like it's hard to find people who live in that industry area, mm-hmm. Like the theme parks and stuff, the beach area, who aren't either snowbirds for up north who got like condos or. People who traveled, like especially young people, travel down here to work at the theme parks, like Disney and stuff.
Right.
But then the further north you go, the more like southern in culture you get.
Well, because Alabama, I think, covers almost half of the panhandle.
Yeah,
you got
you're
Alabama,
like knocking
you got
on their
Alabama
door when you're
and
at
rural
Panama
Alabama
City
and rural Georgia, both touching right on the panhandle there.
Oh man, they touch it good too.
Ooh, I bet they
anyway, so we That's were gross. for the sake of clarity, we were in Panama City to visit the Seacrest Wolf Preserve in Chipley, ain't far from Tallahassee actually. But yeah, so it was honestly one of my favorite. I think it was my favorite travel times. I mean, yeah, the Seacrest Wolf Preserve, can't say enough good things. It's a wolf preserve, but on Saturdays they it's like $30-$35, something like that. You basically spend half the day with different wolf packs, but like in there with them. And these are wolves. I mean, you are only allowed in with the wolves who have been like imprinted on humans. Like the first thing they see when they open their eyeballs is a human. So obviously there are several cages in there. You are absolutely allowed nowhere near and have several cages worth of layers before you could even get in. Mm-hmm. But man, what a good experience! We had one cute little white wolf, Liberty, kept following us around.
That was I cute. Think we have a picture with Liberty somewhere.
Oh, yeah, and then the Arctic foxes too. Remember that climbing?
Yeah,
our
they had
and...
Right at the end there. After you, because they have like the first sort of pen where they take you in, and they have the biggest wolf pack. They take you into the second one, and you can get this pretty cool kind of souvenir picture where you stand up against. With your back up against this kind of log fall, and they get four of them to stand up on top of it, and they're like it's a very neat experience.
Oh, man. It was,
and then the next one was Arctic wolves,
which they were so cool.
Were very skittish,
super skittish,
very beautiful animals, but very skittish. So
they were okay.
Really
they reminded me. They reminded me of cats because, like, they get at least with you and I. Because I think we two were like the last ones in the cage. But like, they would come just close enough, like pet me. You reach out, I'm like, no. And they go just out of petting range. I'm like, come on. Like, it's like they want your attention, but like, don't touch me, though. Like, they have like that cat attitude.
It's like the little picture where the cat's like, pet me.
With your eyes.
Exactly. Arctic wolves. There.
But then you get to go for the rest of the time, and it's a significant amount of time. You get to go into the pen where they have the Arctic foxes. They have like two skunks, a bunch of raccoons.
They had a silver fox as well. So the silver fox part of a domestication experiment in Russia. So I know, and this isn't an urban legend. This is straight up true. So in Russia, they've been having over the past several decades, they've been finding these silver foxes, which are mostly black, but they got like a silver tip on their tail and their paws, like little mitts, and their little ear tips. And they've been breeding them like the most docile, the most friendly. They've been selectively breeding them to create what they'd hoped to be a domesticated fox. Mm-hmm. Right. And the problem is like, man, it's going to take a lot more than decades to fucking domesticate something. So I believe in Russia, they are considered domestic. However, here, they most certainly are not. And the one that they had, I remember them saying, a volunteer saying that this particular one was from FSU, the university or the Florida State University, fucking Seminoles. where some rich girl, I don't know, I guess thought she's above and beyond everyone. You're not even allowed to have a fucking fish in a college dorm. But her parents bought her, like, imported a silver fox from Russia so she could sneak it into her dorm as a pet. And so obviously she was caught with it because it's a fucking fox in a tiny dorm that she shares with somebody. And then and then they didn't know what to do with it when they caught it. So the Secret Preserve adopted it. And one thing I do remember them saying, too, is that the more domesticated the foxes became, kind of the more rounded dog-like their ears were. Mm-hmm. So that was just something interesting, I thought.
It's interesting how they take on different physical attributes as well as, the emotional, if that's what you call it, where they're more docile. It's kind of like orca whales, where when they're in the wild, their fins stand straight up, but once you get them in a tank, their fins kind of droop over. Do-do-do-do-do. Oh man, what a movie.
Hold me like a river Jordan. You can then say to me, you are my friend.
Oh boy.
Macaulay Culkin, I miss you.
That wasn't Macaulay Culkin.
No, but he was friends with them. Alright, anyway. So, Seacrest Wolf Preserve, again, can't say enough good things. Also, speaking of Twilight, if you guys were Team Jacob, and I know I was, and you like wolves, man, check it out. The money goes to keeping these wolves. And these aren't wolves that were like, some are bred in captivity just because they happen to live there. But most of the wolves that they have that are brought in are ones that are just saved from being, from pest control or you know, things like that, you know. So it's for a good call. Or things like, obviously, if you fucking try to have a goddamn fox in your dorm, like, who does? I mean, I wish I had a fox in my dorm, to be fair, but I never lived in a dorm.
Right.
So if I did live in a dorm, it'd be cool to have
check
a fox.
Double check the website before you go, because there is an age limit to go into the cages for safety reasons.
True,
obviously. So just double check that.
Obviously, also, you can only bring in a disposable camera. And you're
nothing
not allowed to wear weather. You're not allowed to wear leather because it's, you know, obviously dead animal. You don't want to be wearing dead animal around wolves. Yeah. Panama City, wolves and whiskey. There you go. but that was Panama City. That was Panama City Beach. Gateway, I would consider the gateway into the panhandle. Now Pensacola Beach is further west. A good ways, and it's home to one of the most terrifying creatures ever to lurk our briny Gulf coasts.
All right, I'm gonna take a wild stab again.
Go for it.
And assume it looks just like Nessie and Champ.
You would be absolutely correct.
Yeah,
you are right on the nose, man. So the book Florida's Unexpected Wildlife by Michael Newton. It tells about the account of Edward McCleary, an 18-year-old who went out rafting off the coast here. Some of his buddies back in 1962. Storm caught him off guard, dragged him offshore, dropped a heavy fog on top of their faces and carried them way out to sea regions unknown.
God.
Well, at least unknown to them. They're on a fucking raft. They didn't have no cell phones back then.
Jesus, that part alone is a nightmare. Just thinking of all those sharks and squid out there ready to gnaw you in half or entangle your legs with their squishy barbed tendrils.
Man, I'm telling you. hours adrift, these frightened young boys started hearing splashing sounds. And stranger still, hissing sounds. Accompanied by a dank, rotten smell.
Danker than the people we find in Walmart.
Ooh, especially their hair. Now, these sounds these sounds were at a distance at first. But then, the splashes started getting closer. The hissing started getting louder. The smell. More and more like Walmart.
Stronger. Nope. Nope. And definitely nope.
Yep, yep, and definitely yep. Because finally, through the fog, they saw, to quote McCleary, what looked like a pole about 10 feet high, sticking straight up out of the water. On top of that was a bulb-like structure.
Could be a buoy.
Sure was, just a buoy. Boys paddle ashore, live happily ever after.
Oh, really?
No! That shit was a monster.
Oh, yeah.
And the boys did paddle, though, towards a sinking ship, which McCleary assumed to be the monster's original target. Though perhaps could have been a travel vessel, I don't know, hauling the creature somewhere.
Ah, some serious King Kong and Jurassic Park 2 vibes.
When this one ended, actually, a whole lot more like Jurassic Park 2, only more like the scene with the raptors in the tall grass than the transported T-Rex. Because McCleary and his pals, man, they paddled towards that injured boat. Because it was sunk, but like part of it, it wasn't that deep. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so deep that it engulfed the entire large ship. So part of it was still stuck upward. So they paddled towards that injured boat. He heard the echoed screams of each of his pals swimming behind him as they were pulled under one by one.
Yeah, I'm never going to the beach again.
Once reaching the larger boat, McCleary got one good look at the beast before summoning all his energy into an Olympian burst of speed towards the shore where he was found by rescue units. He said that the neck alone towered 12 feet above the surf, mossy in color, a kind of greenish-brown, with the head of a razor-sharp-toothed turtle and big, bulging green eyes with oval pupils. I mean, I don't know if the pupils are like sideways like a goat or like an octopus or upright, but nah, he didn't specify that.
Okay, well, terrifying either way.
True.
And what did the rescue team and the authorities do about all of this?
Man, just about jack and shit, far as I can tell.
Standard.
Yeah. And even though newspapers and Fate magazine wrote a piece on McCleary's encounter, his tail just kind of faded into obscurity.
You'd think his tail only being in 1962 would have sparked a massive search. I would imagine it would be like Jaws. After all, there have been episodes of mass hysteria over far less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. That is a mite strange. It kind of makes you think that the authorities just brushed it off, like kind of like the mayor in Jaws, actually, to keep the beaches open for tourists. But like, come on, man, several boys died.
Okay, so the question remains. It was most likely not a sea dragon or a plesiosaur if this was the one and only case to occur in modern times.
True.
So what was it?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, well, I mean, my bet is on a sea snake or an eel. Like, maybe it was a sea serpent, but a reasonable one.
Okay.
Something more plausible than some sea dragon or prehistoric relic.
The only problem with that, though, is sea snakes, they don't live in the Atlantic waters, much less the Gulf.
None of them?
Nah, man. Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean, yeah, but there are about 60 or so species of aquatic snake, banging on one of them in the Atlantic.
Well, yeah, and eels don't really raise their heads from the water, do they?
No.
At least not 10 to 12 feet skyward.
No, man. Back to the boat, though, hauling it. Maybe it was like an anaconda or like a large constrictor of some sort being shipped. I mean, today I know the black market trade on exotic animals is upwards of like $10 billion a year.
And probably silver foxes.
Right.
Ah, jeez. But that's a good hypothesis. Shows like Fatal Attractions and Tiger King really show just how bonkers yet lucrative these illegal trades are. You know, constrictor snakes, while often aquatic, only thrive in fresh water, though, to my knowledge.
Yeah, even when we was at Seacrest, though, they told us about how some of the wolves would escape after huge storms, would compromise their structures. There was even an emu sighted out here in Pensacola. Man, you name it, it can get loose if you got it hidden somewhere. Now, a lot of this is due to the destructive forces of Mother Nature herself. It's not outlandish to believe that a ship crashed due to the same storm and fog the boys were caught up in could accidentally have released whatever live cargo they may have been transporting.
All right, so the truth behind this story may have involved a giant snake.
Yeah.
That would explain why people didn't see it again after that. I mean, the snake simply couldn't survive long out there. Not to mention that, having presumably just eaten large meals, this sluggish serpent may have fallen prey to any of the aforementioned ocean predators stocking the Gulf of Mexico. But wow, I mean, what an incredible story, tragic as it were. Any other monsters out in these parts?
Fair to mention our boy Skunky.
Hey!
Or at least, you know, members of the skunk ape family.
Sure.
They've been reported out in this area, but I mean, it's hard to find an area in Florida that ain't seen a skunk ape at this point. In fact, I'll include a map of Florida cryptid sightings for your viewing pleasure for y'all at home on our Instagram at the Tailgate Podcast. You can just see how many of our counties have had skunk ape sightings. Spoiler alert, pretty sure it's all of them.
Okay. Is this area known for anything besides giant ferocious beasts?
Shit, man. Pensacola is actually known as a city of five flags. In fact, there's a bit of historical rivalry between Pensacola here and St. Augustine.
Ah, God. This is a refreshing change of pace.
For monsters, yeah.
Now, how exactly did one city in Florida get five flags? And how could any city here even compete with the nation's oldest city, St. Augustine?
Well, the Spanish fleet under Captain Tristan de Luna y Arellano. I tried. I'm an English major. Sailed to Pensacola in 1559, looking to settle down, only to get smacked with a big-ass hurricane not 2 years later. What remained of his people, they fled back to the Mexican settlements. It weren't until 1698 where Pensacola was settled again by colonists.
So had the hurricane not crashed into them so early on, Pensacola might have become the oldest city in the United States.
Bingo.
Yeah, I'll be gosh darned.
Also, this here city once competed as a state capital with St. Augustine.
Well, I thought the state capital was Tallahassee.
Yeah, but that weren't till 1824. So Pensacola originally flew a Spanish flag.
One.
Then French had the city between 1719 and 1722.
Two.
Only about 3 years. Then Britain, they held it a little bit longer than the French did between 1763 and 1781.
Three.
In that time, the capital of the British section of Florida was Pensacola, while the capital of the Spanish side was St. Augustine.
Okay. So French, Britain, Spain, obviously the United States.
Yeah.
But that leaves only one mystery flag left.
The Confederacy.
Woof.
Yeah. History, man.
Yeah. Well, while I know it's hard to outdo a Florida man at Florida history, I do have an ace up my sleeve.
What? What's that doing there?
I left my playing cards in my pocket when I threw everything in the wash. Caprese
salad.
Completely irrelevant. But I also happen to have a story for you that pairs with our last encounter with the ghost of Railroad Bill.
Oh, lay it on me.
Poor Bill remained in an unmarked grave for decades before finally being recognized and given a proper tombstone. But
I do remember that.
Yes. But I did a little digging while you were driving, and lo and behold, Pensacola is brimming with recently discovered unmarked graves.
Yikes. Man, there's always an urban legend of unmarked graves in these parts, but I never knew it to be confirmed or the outcome of any of the searches.
Well, brace yourself, because this is a very true, very haunting tale. And anyone triggered by physical abuse, you may want to skip ahead 2 or 3 minutes. We aren't going into too many details, though, so if that's what you're looking for, you're going to have to do deeper research on your own.
Man, is that bad?
It's pretty bad. Ever heard of the Dozier School for Boys?
I heard of that one.
All right. I read an article where several of the unfortunate youths who were forced to attend this reform school, those who survived anyway, reunited to speak up about their horrific experiences there. The White House Boys, they're called. And it's not because they were aspiring presidential candidates.
All right, your story's got me hooked.
All right, so this was a boarding school that opened in the year 1900 for boys who were troubled. But as it turned out, most of the boys were either just caught smoking or ran away or simply didn't have families to live with. Just regular kids caught doing regular kid stuff or hung out to dry by events outside of their control.
Oh, bless their hearts.
Yeah. So the Dozier School for Boys, though it had gone by several name changes over its 111-year history, was notorious for its brutal punishments on the boys.
Oh, them poor kids. Man, ain't a person alive could help them?
No, that or everyone was just complicit. Mm-hmm. One survivor named Jerry Cooper attended the school as an 11-year-old back in 1961. He said he was sleeping soundly when he was suddenly yanked up at 2 a.m. and carried to the White House, the school's personal torture chamber, and strapped to the bed. There he received 135 lashes with a leather strap.
Jumping Jesus, man, this is straight out of a horror film.
And again, he was lucky he survived. Throughout this school's longevity, there were 81 known fatalities. And worse still...
Gets worse?
Yeah. Nobody knew what happened to the bodies. The school only closed in 2011...
Damn!
...after all their allegations caught up with them.
Oh, for fuck's sake. The school was open 111 years? Man, took them long enough. Anyone ever find the bodies?
Well, for the longest time, the whereabouts of the missing boys were all up to speculation until recently. Excavations conducted through the University of South Florida have found 55 discarded remains throughout several unmarked graves so far, but speculation is that there could be hundreds.
Man, shit got dark real fast. Well, how about we lighten up the mood with our final story from the Panhandle, the haunting of the Pensacola Lighthouse.
A haunted lighthouse is your idea of lightening up the mood?
Well, I like the pun, but okay. Also, I mean, compared to the Dozier School, it's a damn Disney movie.
Yeah, touche. I'll give you that
one. Yeah, Pensacola Lighthouse on Disney Plus. So, story takes place in the year 1826. 1826. Michaela Penelber, what do you call it, Penelber?
I would say Penalber.
Penalber?
Yeah, that flows, and it doesn't sound like penis to me.
Michaela Penalber married Jeremiah Ingram, and the two ran the Pensacola Lighthouse together.
Oh.
Man, all was fine and dandy at first, but then eventually there's speculation of abuse.
Oh.
Then Michaela started getting mighty jealous of Jeremiah.
Oh, was he a two-time and no good cheater?
No, that'd be too normal for Miss Michaela Panabar. Penalber. For Michaela Penalber. As you see, she was jealous over her lighthouse. As weeks went on, she couldn't handle sharing the lighthouse with anybody, including her husband.
Hmm.
And she stabbed her husband to death.
Woof.
She's smart enough, though, not to leave enough evidence to be convicted in her lifetime, and worked at that lighthouse till she, herself, in 1855, passed on.
Yeah, jeez. Sounds like she passed on, but never truly left.
Ever since, people been hearing her breathing.
Fumes.
Seeing her watching him, and having witnesses occasionally see explicit bloodstains that would just kind of up and come and disappear. Apparently she throws shit, too. She don't throw shit. She didn't throw shit, but she throws
girl's
stuff.
Girl's got a temper.
You know, she throws objects, poltergeist style. Or maybe she does throw shit. I don't know.
Sure. I gotcha. Sounds like this girl's got a temper.
Man, some say Michaela was possessive over the lighthouse. Others think it was the lighthouse which possessed her.
Well, that sure was spooky as fuck. Oh, hey! You see that? We just crossed over into Alabama.
What?
Oh, we completed our first state.
Yeah. I mean, it's Alabama, but we made it over the border. Yeah. Actually, exactly at nightfall, too.
Oh, wait.
What?
Granny's dowsing pendulum is swinging northeast now.
What?
What could be up there, and why the sudden change or direction?
Check the travel chart. See what's out that way. I think it could be the witch in the woods.
Well, this is northeast, so it's possible. Gadsden, where the Witch in the Wood lives, is like the northeasternmost corner of the state, though. This looks more like we're going to Abbeville, according to the chart.
Okay, for y'all wondering how we operate, we have a pretty exhaustive chart here, marking every urban legend, tale, cryptid that we could find in their proper locations and regions of origin. From there, we just drive on following whatever direction the crystal points. Given within reason, it's somewhere near within the state bordering I-10, which is what our destination is. And as far as things line up currently, looks like we are on trajectory for Abbeville, Alabama. But I ain't going to spoil nothing yet about who we intend to meet there. So definitely tune in next week to find out.
Yeah, thank you all for joining us for this week's Dashboard Chats. Also, in the past year, 1 in 7 kids experienced abuse or neglect, much like those White House boys. If you or someone you know has experienced abuse or is an abuser themselves, speak up.
Yeah, please.
It could save a life. For crisis intervention information, referrals, and support, contact the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline at 1-800-422-4453 or contact the Crisis Text Line by texting the letters D as in Delta and S as in Sierra. That's D-S to 741-741.
Yeah, and we'll be posting more resources like this on our Instagram, so follow us there, the Tailgate Podcast, for photos, cast info, updates, and more. And for questions, art, or stories of your own, drop us a line at thetailgatepodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, dude, fan art would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that's when you like you know you made it as a podcast.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We'll see you later, tailgaters.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining us for our latest Dashboard Chat. Aaron the Cheesehead is played by Aaron Sherry. You can catch him on his YouTube channel, so can you. Harrison the Florida Man is played by Harrison Foreman. Theme song is performed by Matt Jones. This episode is written by Harrison Foreman and edited by Harrison Foreman.